Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, baby, do we have a very special episode with you, for you, with our star. Oh, my gosh.
This is a great, great episode. We have so much fun talking to Abby McEnany from Work in Progress on Showtime. What a fun chat. We talk a lot about the show. We talk a lot about Chicago and just good vibes all around, huh? Wouldn't you say, Meats?
I thought it was a great vibe. It was so fun, goofy. Abby is next level. I really do feel like we could hang out in person and it would be fun.
Have
She's
some
great.
Vodka limbs.
Vodka limb. Well, mine would be tequila limb.
Tequila limb.
A tequiki.
Let's have a tequiki.
Anyway, I'm still fucked up from Bushwick. I'll talk to y'all later.
Forever Dog.
When your first choice is a big old bus,
you turn around and boom, you end up with us. Sloppy Seconds.
Oh, Diva. Our number is 213-536-9180. Our email is sloppysecondspot@gmail.com. Now on with the show. Hi, you slops, you stupid little slops, you stupid little fuck, you not a little fuck, you dare little fuck. Welcome to Sloppy Suckers with Big Dipper and Meatball. I'm Meatball, and that's Big Dipper.
Hello, we are the home for all the sloppiest, stupidest little fucks in the world. Meatball, welcome back from New York. Are you ready for the episode today?
I am absolutely ready. I'm well rested. I locked the cats out last night, and I'm ready to party.
Well, I'm very excited today. We have a special guest, the creator and star of the Showtime show Work in Progress. It's Abby McEnany!
Ow, 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 ow. Hey! I mean, honestly, how horrible is that already?
That's amazing.
That was wonderful.
You're delivering just what we wanted and expected from you.
Oh, gosh. Hi!
Hi, how are you doing?
I am really doing all right. I'm so happy to be here. Yeah, what a treat.
We're happy to have you.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you.
How's your summer going?
What were you going to say? Well, you know, I mean, we had to take you, so.
Well, the managers got to talking,
you know,
disappeared on our schedule.
Yeah, you're like, motherfucker, I have to pick up this bitch. You're like, all right, we'll do one.
No, I will argue with you on this because you are good friends with my former roommate.
Yes.
And... Yep. Not to be a star fucker, but when season one of your show came out, I was like, oh my God, we should have Abby on the pod. And then it just sort of like never happened. And
wow.
I asked, well, because you and I have met a few times in real life before.
Oh.
And I had asked him for your phone number, but then I figured you were getting bombarded by like press requests at season one. And then we was just sort of waiting. And then I knew season two was happening, blah, blah, blah. So this has been in my mind like 9 months to a year in the making.
Holy shit, that's wild. You know, I was just texting with Tim earlier. Mm-hmm. Dear friend Tim, what's up? Anyways, yeah, that's great. You know, I've got that banter, Meatball. I've got that podcast banter.
No, we love it. Well, no, I was just thinking about, because like we used to talk about Tim all the time to the point where we were asked to stop talking about him and his dog.
Oh, shit, did I already get in trouble?
No,
okay,
it's fine. No, this is okay.
At the beginning of the pandemic, of course, I was still living with Tim.
Yes.
And we were in the house constantly, and I was recording all of these podcasts from the house, and it just got to a certain point where it was like, okay, I think we don't need to. And then, you know, to give us both some space, I eventually moved out, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And now I haven't seen Tim in like so long, but hi Tim.
Hi Tim. Anyways, yeah. Well, like legit, very happy to be here. Thank you very much. It's really fun already.
Thank you.
And not to overwhelm the pandemic talk, but we have been known to have one or two conversations about COVID on this show.
Mm-hmm. We are a QAnon podcast.
we you know are what? Full of theories. Yeah. Conspiracy they may be.
Yes. Oh, for sure. I have theories and none of them involve rationality. I'm down to clown for this shit. Yeah.
Well, your show, you know, you're very open about conversations about like obsessive behavior and germophobia and things like that. So I am just curious for you as a person, how a global pandemic affected you.
Yeah.
Did you leave the house for a little bit or were you sort of there for a year?
It was bad. And also, you know, and this sounds so, I always hesitate to be like, God, it was really hard because, you know, I'm one of the most fortunate people in the world, right? Like I could pay for my rent and I could afford still seeing my therapist twice a week and I could afford my meds and my family was safe and I was safe. So like, I just want to put that out there. Like this privileged cunt is saying she had a really hard time. But
here's
anyways.
The title of the episode.
Right? Yeah, okay. privileged cunt. That's like my epitaph. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was absolutely miserable. It was as bad as, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure other people had it worse. It was bad. And again, I had so many things that I was very grateful for, but yeah.
Sure.
Didn't leave the house. It was like, it was, yeah. It was,
felt like the germs were coming to get you.
I mean,
sort of like
I would,
a horror film.
I mean, yeah. And it's like, you know, for somebody with OCD who like hates germs, it's like, oh, if you know, everybody has germs that's going to kill you. I mean, it was just like, you know, and again, OCD is not basic. There's a lot of magical thinking, right? It's not like all rational and stuff. So yeah, it was pretty much the worst.
Oh, no.
I'm glad I brought it up.
No, but hey,
quick check-in.
Wait, yeah, you know, let's start real dark.
No,
we'll
but it's
work
fine.
Out. We'll get out.
But that's the truth. And also, you know, it was so crazy. Oh God, oh, you should use that word. I know I'm a big fucking problem. And anyways, like some people have been like reaching out.
We use
like,
the word crazy, don't worry.
Okay, copy. But yeah, we're queuing on. like they'd be like, oh, we were wondering about maybe willing to do like how to wash your hands video, like kind of like cute and glib. I was like, fuck no, this is like my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
There's nothing cute. I can't even like, and I was in a bad space anyways, kind of going into it, like not great anyways. And started like, it was like, that's sort of the stuff.
That's so wild because for anyone who's listening, who hasn't seen Work in Progress, like in the first season, there's a whole scene where you basically rub your hands raw from obsessively washing them. So for them to approach you and say like, you know, it would be cute. Teach people how to wash your hands. You're like, I'll teach people how to rub the skin off their hands.
Yeah. And it was like, and also those, like somebody was like, so I've been asked like, what, you know, are the scenes with Julia Sweeney talking about Pat, are those really hard? I'm like, no, they're fucking bald. What are hard are those fucking washing hands scenes. Like they're the really bad days.
Yeah.
Really, really bad days. Not only like, are you doing this thing that like, again, I don't have shame about my OCD and stuff, right? Or my mental illnesses, like, but it's a very tense thing and a fraught thing for me. And to be doing that in front of, I don't know, 80 people and then having to do it over and over again. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm gonna do this. It was just, really glad you're talking about all your fucked up stuff.
No, but it's
listen,
totally true.
The question you answered, you know,
making the show, you're like, we need coverage. Let's do it again. And the whole point of the scene is that you're doing it too many times.
To get out of
you literally have to do it again. It's like you've created your own living nightmare.
Yeah, exactly right. All right. So okay. Rims on me.
So
thanks,
cool.
Big Dick.
Yeah, you got it.
So the creation of your show apparently had something to do with The Matrix. Like you made the show with Tim Mason and then Lily Wachowski saw it at Sundance and like really enjoyed it. So that was the way the question was worded in my outline. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So you are in The Matrix.
Classic. Yeah. You don't see me. I see that. Let's see. So I like the quick and dirty of it is that I did a storytelling show in 2016 at the IO Theater here in Chicago. And my friend Tim Mason came and saw it. We were going to work on something else. And he's like, why don't we just make this? And I was like, yeah. And then we worked on it for a few years. And we had shot a fast story. It's already 25 minutes. We shot like a proof of concept scene, which ended up being the first scene in the pilot. It's like where my therapist dies. And we shot that in 2016. And then we were kind of showing it around. Nobody was really into it. So we raised our own money and then we made our pilot. Coincidentally enough, I'd already met Lily. We were friends. We were having dinner together, her and her partner and our friend, the four of us. And our friend Hale said, like, so what are you doing? When are you shooting that? I'm like, oh, I think we're going to do it like next month. And she was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, I'm doing this thing. I never talked to Lily about it. Cause like, you know, she had left the industry. She was, you know, in art school. I never wanted to like disrespect her, like wanting to move on from this really, this business. I mean, it's brand new to me. And it's like, I think I'm very lucky. I'm still in Chicago and I think I'm away from a lot of the bullshit of it.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, and then she's like, oh, I was like, oh, you know, she's like, well, send me that thing. So I sent it to her. And then we made the pilot and then we got EPs that were part of her. Anyways, yeah. So it kind of like her manager was like, hey, would you want it? Because we were already with that management company. Would you want to EP this? So she said like, hey, do you want me to EP this? And I was like, no, you don't want to be that. I mean, so stupid. I was like, no. I mean, like, you don't want to do it. Like, you have left. You've left that.
Yeah.
You've left that world. Like, I want you to be happy. And then, so I said, I mean, really,
always I'm not been shrewd with the career moves. There it is.
I mean, smart. Anybody will tell you, I am like really bad at everything. And then, like a month later, she brought it up again. I'm like, I mean, are you okay with it? And so, and that's how she signed on. So she was actually not part of the development of the pilot.
Oh, okay.
And she was signed. She didn't come with us to Sundance, but she was already on board before we went to Sundance.
Got it.
And then we went out and we did some pitches the next week and she was with us for that. And then we got Showtime, which was such a dream come true. Like, it's outrageously cool.
That's kind of like an amazing spot to be in because you have the person on your team. She's like literally responsible for one of the the biggest films in like film history, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
If you were to make a short list of like biggest impact films, like Matrix, all of the films are on there,
right?
And to have her at your side on your team, but also know that you guys created that pilot and made the initial thing sort of without her, so there's like strength in your artistic integrity and then like a really strategic sort of like creative pairing. So it gives validity on both sides of it. I feel like that's sort of the coolest place to be because you're not walking into a room like, oh, we're only here because Lily likes us too.
Right.
Like you're also like, no, we made the actual thing and got it into Sundance.
Dip, I've never thought about it that way.
Oh.
That's so lovely.
Yeah, it's
fun. Changed your mind.
I mean, part of me is like, I think that's, wow, that's really powerful. I would say like, I think the reason we're on, that we actually got picked up is because Lily was on board and she was with, Tim and I like had no experience in this world and like he had directed some commercials and stuff. And I mean, I've auditioned every once in a while, never booked anything. I'm like the worst. So like, you know, I mean, so I think that there were like, for sure, that definitely helped us get signed and stuff, yeah. Which was great. But like, oh, I really like that.
Yeah.
Also, do you hate when I call you Dip and Big Dip? Do you hate
No,
it?
Everyone calls
no,
him Dip.
I love it.
Okay.
I remember running into you at that cafe
at the
in
coffee.
LA.
I totally remember this.
You were so
I was starstruck.
Excited and it made me feel so
him?
Good.
Yes. I was like, wow. Oh my God.
You're the only one.
I was with he who shall not be named Tim Paul.
Yeah.
And we were Big Dip came. And he was like, oh, that's my friend Big Dipper. I'm like, no way. And of course I knew who Big Dip was. And then I was like, and then you came over. I was like, oh, hi, Big Dip, I'm Abby. And then Dip was like, oh, we've met. I'm like, really? At Big Chicks.
Yeah.
But I was about to say, so y'all, there's a Chicago connection between y'all. That's how you know each other.
Yes, but I didn't know. I don't remember. I was probably a toe up on vodka lems.
Meatball's like, we're talking about cocktails now?
Okay, now I'm in.
That's okay.
Yeah, Big Chick's the best bar on the face of the planet.
It really is.
Are you from Chicago too, Meatball?
No, but I go to Chicago all the time to perform. So, like, I love it there. And we've been to Big Chick's for, like, their dance night. I think it's Monday nights that they have the big gay night there.
Every night is a big gay night. It's changed over time, but they've had a lot of really fun
really fun nights. Also, not to be like all like, start, like, will you let, like, what, can I find out the next time y'all are in town? Like, that'd be fun to come out.
Yes. I was just there last week.
Meatball makes does a great performance.
Oh my God, please let me know.
Fell off the stage at Roscoe's last week. Okay.
Oh my God, so did I.
We've all got the bruises from the Roscoe stage.
So your whole show is set in Chicago.
Yeah. But let's,
was there any...
I know I cued you to do this, but let's just take a break and then we'll talk Chicago.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're going to leave that in. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long.
When my fridge is stocked with Factor meals, I'm like, oh baby, I don't have to think about this. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so nice. The combinations are so good. I am a meat eater, but the vegetable options, there are so many. Like, I remember I had a mushroom with pasta and like a cauliflower rice. And I was like, the mushroom is filling. Like, there's plenty of portion. There's plenty of vegetable and there's plenty of flavor. And I am usually sort of not a microwave person.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool that this quality of food can just be heated up in the microwave.
And so fast. I also love it because I am a very much into ordering delivery.
I know.
Now having all the food there, I can kind of pick what I want and it's ready in 2 minutes. I don't have to wait an hour for stuff to get delivered. And these are way healthier options than ordering delivery.
Completely. And when they have multiple things in them, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, if I cook for myself, all I'm going to eat is the biggest bowl of pasta you've ever seen in your life. But this is you get a little pasta and the chicken and a vegetable all in one dish.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
And Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you gotta do is heat up and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause to reschedule deliveries that suit your lifestyle.
And we're celebrating Earth Day all month long with Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu items for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/sloppyseconds50 and use code sloppyseconds50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box.
That's code SLOPPYSECONDS50 at factormeals.com/SLOPPYSECONDS50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
That's a sleigh, baby.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars, because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming. In the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
We're back!
Okay. Yoo-hoo!
Yes, Yoo-hoo! It's a chocolate drink. It's not milk.
It's a chocolate drink.
It's a chocolate drink.
Is there dairy in it?
I don't think so.
Because it says not milk on the side?
Yeah.
This is definitely a QAnon spiral we should go down.
Yeah. Let's get to the bottom of
Yoo-Hoo. Yoo-Hoo is all the microchips. Wait. Microchips only.
Have you ever seen Wicked?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
All right, moving on.
Okay. Right. You're like, okay, let's take another break dip.
Wicked. Okay. So you shot everything and you used like pretty much only Chicago actors. Was that by design or did someone like try to trick you into moving it to LA or shooting it somewhere else?
Well, we always wanted to do it here. We're like in our dreams, you know, like when we started working on this, like it was like, I mean, I still, and I think this sounds fake, but I still kind of, I don't believe it. Like, this is just wild, right? Like, you know, it's whatever. You can cut that out because it sounds stoops, but like,
no, we won't because I'm going to, I have a follow up question after we talk about Chicago. I do want to talk about the wildness of it.
Yes. But, so it was never, and since Lily lives here and, like it was never brought up because, and I think it, so it was never an issue of like having to move it. And honestly, I think that is like, that's part of it. Right. Because she lives here and so she doesn't want to go to LA. So it was awesome. Like it was never even like a bridge we had to cross.
Oh,
and
nice.
It would certainly have been something that we would have fought for, but, like if we didn't have Lily, but like if we had to, but who knows if we would have won a battle.
Because
right?
I could even imagine, I could imagine like a Hollywood scenario where it's like,
yeah,
you sell the show, you have to come to LA for the writer's room. You have to come to LA for the editing. Yeah. You have to come. And yeah, we'll do 2 weeks of on location shoots in Chicago, but then we're going to do sets in LA. Yeah. Like it's so interesting that you were are able to just base the whole thing out of Chicago.
We did everything here. And so we write here. We shoot everything here. We do all post here. Nothing is done in LA.
That's incredible.
It is really incredible. And I think, and I'm so grateful for it. Add that to the list of everything I'm grateful for. Like it's just so wonderful. You know, it really is such a gift.
Well, what does Chicago mean to you? Cause you've lived there for so long and you know, you've done, you know, we could sort of go up and down the Clark Street and talk about all the different, you know what I mean?
Ooh.
It's like you have relationships with all of these, like, you know, places in Chicago and communities. It's like, what does the city mean to you? Not only as an artist, but like in relation to the show.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know, I moved here for college and so I never left. And I think I moved around a lot as a kid. And so like change is very difficult. And so I just stayed and it's where kind of I grew up, I guess. Mm-hmm. And what does it mean? I don't know. I love it. I mean, this is where improv is. So I'm so lucky that the only college I got into was here. So I didn't like, you know, it wasn't my first choice. It was like, I applied to 5 schools and got into one. It was my 5th choice and it was here. So like, thank God, you know, and improv's here. And that changed my life to be able to do it, like start taking classes and perform here. I don't know. I just think it's a real, I love it. That's such a dumb thing. Wow.
No,
you know what?
I
just
lost
the Chicago tourism campaign. I was
come for the improv.
Yeah.
Come for the improv and the vodka lambs.
Yeah. And my improv theater is shut down. Like all this stuff is shut down now. But anyways.
But as a person who spent many years in Chicago watching Work in Progress, there are so many things that click to me as iconically Chicago.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, it's like you see like a group of queers, you know, and then it's like, oh, those two hop on their bikes and drive off, or like just even the scenes like on Clark Street in Andersonville.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about lesbianism and the neighborhood of Andersonville.
Okay.
And I want to understand why that is a hub for queer women.
Okay. Well, so, and just so like, I don't define myself as a lesbian anymore. Like just, I define myself as a queer dyke. Just FYI. I just want to get that out there.
Sure.
When I moved to the North Side after college, I lived in Logan for a long time and it was 1992. We weren't born that. All right.
No, we were.
No, we both were. We're old.
Okay. And that's it. Was just like that, like it was a lesbian neighborhood. I don't know much about it. It was just like that's where all the lesbians live. And so like whenever, like to this day, and I live in Andersonville now, and to this day, people are like, well, oh, where do you live? Andersonville. Big surprise. Like it just filled with, you know, queer folks. And like originally like very lesbian. Now it's very like queer folks, and a lot of gay men have left Boys Town and moved up because they got more money. And so like it's definitely, and they're also a lot more like straight couple, like straight families here with like strollers and stuff. But it's still very queer. And like, you know, we have Women and Children First here, which is the best bookstore on the face of the planet. And so I don't know if that answered your question. But yeah, I love it. I mean, it's just, it was weird because in the first season, we block shots, which means that we didn't shoot episode by episode. We shot like locations out.
Oh.
And our last week was all the Andersonville stuff. So, and it was like, you know, my first job, really my first professional job on set. Like I'm in every scene. It was like 7 weeks. I was holding on by a fucking thread, which is normal. I mean, even when I saw Big Dip at the cafe, I was holding on. But like, anyways, but I was, so we're walking up, like we'd like, you know, we're getting those scenes when I'm walking on Clark Street stuff. And I was like, oh fuck, I'm gonna be walking up this street on Saturday to get my coffee. And then like, it kind of was like, oh my God, what was I thinking? But it is really fun to have the neighborhood. And on the whole, people are very supportive. I think, I'm sure it's a pain in the ass, like to have, you know, crews in your neighborhood and like, you know, people are like, I can't park. I'm like, I know, I'm really sorry. But people have been so supportive. It's
amazing that you worry about that.
I worry about everything. And I was like, oh God, when I go into this place, are they going to be like, bitch, we couldn't get our delivery. I'm like, oh my God. Anyways.
But it would be like a different thing if you were shooting some like Marvel film or whatever. Yeah, yeah. You're like making a queer Chicago story.
I don't think that randos on the street really care what's being filmed. They're just upset about not being able to get
their
coffee.
Still like, I want my coffee.
Also, it's also horrifying because it's like your face is the face of it. So they definitely know it's you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. But anyways, but honestly, everyone's been so kind. And I think that because it is such like a, it's, you know, comparatively, it's a low budget, independently kind of like vibe show. And I think we've been very fortunate with the folks around us and in Chicago. It's just been a ball. Like, and I you know, and a bunch of friends out in LA, like doing this stuff in LA. And when I tell them they're like, oh my God, what? Like, this is how your network treats you. I'm like, oh yeah. They're like, oh, that's unheard of. Like stuff like that. Like, it's really like, I'm like, oh gosh, I guess like when you have your first job at 51, like you've suffered some. So like you get some good stuff at 51, maybe. I don't know what the rule is, but we've been very fortunate for sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested in talking about it being your first job. A lot of people's first job is, I was an extra, you know, on this thing, and you mentioned like auditioning for commercials and like doing sketches and that sort of thing. But as far as like your first big Hollywood job, you are the star creator. I mean, you're doing every single job on your own show.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were jumping into the deep end and kind of lost, or did you feel like ready?
Oh my gosh. Jumping into that fucking deep end, dude. I mean, my Lord. And I think it's not even like my first big Hollywood job. It's my first like professional on camera job. Like, I'm not trying to brag. I've done some Friends web series.
Okay.
No big deal. Ooh. Okay. Ladies looking, our friend Tim Paulsing. Anyways, he said he'd give me a $5 for every time I mentioned ladies looking. So I just had to throw that in.
I'm sure you're trying to make that $25 or whatever.
I mean, seriously, I've just made $5. I'm feeling pretty smug about it. Anyways. I was totally, I'll say, okay, first of all, yeah, totally out of my depth, if that's the way to say it, in the deep end, whatever. And, but that being said, I'm not a person who pretends they know something if they don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I'm nervous about enough. I don't want to be caught in lies. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that I know. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like bullshit. You don't know anything. So like, I'm never ashamed of being like, oh, this is new. Like, can people like jump in and give me help? And having Lily as like my partner and one of the people, like her and her sister, who have changed cinema and like knows everything and like knows Chicago and knows how the industry works and knows how things go and how things should be run. I mean, I was in the best hands possible, right? Yeah. And then also our crew, I can't even, I mean, our crew was the best. Like they are really wonderful people. We were very intentional about hiring, you know, who we hired. And and I was just, I can't even say it. Like they took amazing care of me last season and first, and this season as well. So yeah, way over my head. Still am. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe I'm a little closer to the top, but still fucking like, yeah. But
Well, I think it's cool because for your first job, you learned all the jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of
you learned it real fast.
A lot really of people, fast, their first job, it's like, okay, I'm doing a bit part in a thing.
Right,
they look around and they're like, oh, I wonder what the writer's room is like. Or, I wonder what the meetings with the executive producers when they make decisions about like how to block shoot or what we're doing with the budget. Or like, you know, it's like you're, I assume, are a part of all of it.
Yes. Yeah. It is wild. And I feel, again, like I'm so, and it's, yes, it is wild. It's so overwhelmingly awesome because I have Lily there and like, yeah. And like in our writer's room, like this year, we, like the first year, like we started writing before we actually Showtime said officially yes, because they were like still kind of figuring out, but our folks were like, we think they're going to go, if they go, you're going to go really fast. So we think you should start writing. And we're like, oh, okay. So, it was just the three of us, Tim, Lily, and I wrote episodes 2 through 8 together. Like we
wrote all those together.
And then we started that, like we, you know, like did, figure out what's going to happen in the season and stuff. And then I think we were like done with like 7, like, I think that we had, I don't know. We had like drafts of like, you know, 6 of the 7 episodes done by the time they signed on or something.
That's so insane.
It was wild. And then this year, we were able to actually have writer's room, which was such a treat. And like, so that was, and it was like, okay, so this is what a writer's room looks like. Okay. You know? And it was really cool. And we had like a couple writers that had been on other things and some brand new TV writers. And I was, they were like, oh, so we're not doing this. I'm like, oh, wait, what? No, we don't do that. I mean, like, but it works for us,
what,
you know?
Like a blood oath? What are they, no, what are no,
just
about?
Like, you know, they're like, oh,
we don't like haze each
like,
other?
Yeah, no, but like that, like send the outlines and to the network and stuff. Like we like, you know, we went through stuff, but we're not like sending stuff. They don't write their, I think, honestly, writers are going to write to you and be like, bitch, you got it wrong. I'm sure I did, but I am getting it wrong. But it's something like, and then like you outline each episode and then like, it's like, nah, we gave each writer an episode. It's like, okay, you know, you have a thing. And then, I mean, it's just run how we run it. There's no A, B, and C storyline. It's just like, yeah, we kind of figure out the story. And then I don't know. It's, I think it's done a little differently. And I think the two, right. We're like, yeah, we don't really know that language, so like, trust you go.
Well, that's cool.
That sounds even like more fun for the writers, that it's like a different experience, in my opinion.
I hope so. I mean, like, I just think what I like. Oh, did I interrupt you, Paul?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I did. I can tell from your face.
Oh, no.
Wow, from your face? No, her face just looks like that.
Mine just looks like that.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not lifted anymore.
Okay. I can't even remember what I was gonna say. Fuck it. It doesn't matter.
Well, I wanna ask about our good friend of the pod who is one of the writers on your show, Tien Tran.
Oh my gosh. She's the genius of the game.
With her.
She's so
Well deserved to be obsessed about our dear friend Tien. Holy shit, isn't she? She's magnanimous. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Shooting a new TV show out here in LA with Hilary Duff.
I mean, seriously.
Oh yeah.
I mean, everything. Like, I mean, so we just she's fucking nailing it. And she deserves every good. She works so hard, and she's such a dream. She was actually a punch. So we were able to have a punch up writers on our first season. We had 4 folks come in, and she was a punch up writer for 2 weeks on our first season. And then so she was a staff writer this year. And then she was actually in this past weekend's episode. She's in episode 6. She has a role in that.
So cool.
And she's just a dream come true. Yeah.
And have you had a lot of Chicagoans pick up the phone, beep boop bop boop boop, where's my cameo?
Ooh,
I'm trying to act in your TV show.
No, I mean, I think, really? You know, I think I've been really, I don't, people are like, oh, people are going to come out of the woodwork and demand stuff. But no, I've been, I think also I'm not on social media. That probably has helped me.
You don't have to deal with the DMs.
Yeah.
Wait, and how long have you not been on social media?
I've never been on it.
What?
Ever. Yeah.
Wow.
I just knew that on my brain, I knew that my brain
was a shit show.
Yeah, I knew my brain couldn't handle it. Like I knew that it would be bad. And I remember people be like, "Well, you really should get on Twitter. It'll help your career." I'm like, "Bitch, if I was on Twitter, I wouldn't be alive to have a career." You know what I mean? Like it's such a toxic thing. People are like, "We know social media. We know how you feel about it." But I think it's the worst. And I'm very aware of my what I need and how to protect my brain and my heart. Not always, but like from the jump, I was like, fuck no, I'll never do it. So
that's amazing. It's so interesting because being in this entertainment industry and Meatball and I are both people who we've created something on our own that we put it out there and we're hustling to try to get people to pay attention. It's like, it's sort of social media becomes sort of this like necessity, right? And you know, having the podcast is, it is entertainment. It is not necessarily social media, but it's adjacent. You know, we're putting out this, we're self-producing a product that we put out all the time. And it's just sort of like, it's an interesting spot to be in because I think, I'm annoyed that I spend so much time looking at Instagram stories and scrolling through TikTok. But also I know it's like, oh, when I drop merch, I put it on my Instagram and then I can make money. Or if I have a new music video, I have to promote it. And so it's this weird thing. And I think that's so cool that you were like, you know what? That is not going to be my narrative and I cannot handle that.
And also I have to say, like, I totally understand. And it's just like, I understand why you're on it. Like, it's not like, and I also have to say, it's not like, oh, I would. The reason, because I would fucking do deep dives. I already have enough hard times, even when it's not a pandemic, if I'm going through a very bad depressive time, I'm already not leaving the house. I don't need another reason not to leave it. I don't need to see. And that's also, I think it's harmful for the people on it and their performative thing. It's harmful for people watching it or seeing other people performatively happy, all that shit. And also people are hateful. And it's just plus all the other shit that we know wrong with it. However, so one of my best friends, Brendan Dowling, who was a writer at Sapphire this year and also is in episode 5, he plays Bunkle Rick, for anybody who's watched the show, anyways, he every once in a while he'd be like, he used to live in Chicago, he lives in Atlanta, and he'd be like, get to picture it. He's so funny. And he would take a picture like and start giggling and he's like, I'm gonna post this, and he'd come up with the most hilarious caption. And this is how addicted to, like, I understand it. It's like, he's like, this one's going to be a 67 liker. And I was like, okay. So then I couldn't move on. I would be hanging out. I'm like, what are we at now? Like, I was like, how many likes do I have? So I was like, you claim this. This is something that you claim. If we don't get that, it's a random number.
Right.
If we don't get that, that's a fail. And that's on me. Right. Like, I'm not saying that like my brain is better put together that I can handle it. I can't. And that's not it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and then he'd be like, we're at 68. I'm like, okay, what do you want to do now? I mean, I'm just like, what?
You're like, finally, we can move on.
I mean, seriously, I was like, what are we at? I mean, it's just such a
toxic. God. Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't come look at our accounts.
Oof. Yeah.
Oof. Wait. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Meatball, I want you to ask that question that I highlighted because I have a feeling you would be a terror in this certain scenario, Meatball.
Oh, I would. I would be awful. Okay, so you got your first assistant?
Yeah.
I had an assistant for a while and they quit. What kind of stuff do you ask your assistant to do? Is it easy to, like, you know, ask him to do stuff and be nice about it? Or
my God, that is so funny. He's actually I'm in the production office right now. He's on the other side. He's the one who brought me a coffee. I swear, y'all. First of all, I've needed this system my whole fucking life. Okay? So, this is just, it's just so wonderful. So, well, when we're in production, it's like so many hours, right? Like, so it's like, you know, driving me there and then like get my lunch and all that stuff and like keeping me, I mean, it's just that was hard time for everybody, or just very busy time. And he's like, oh, you need a break. I'm like, bitch, you need a break. I mean,
it's
he's
like
so
life
good.
Support at that
it's,
point.
It really is. Yeah. And then, you know, it's funny because like, but the time in pre-production, we started rolling. Whoo! That's the urban assault vehicle take or mix of Roland by Limp Bizkit. Anyways, that was what I was sitting right there. Yeah. Rolling. Woo! Anyways, shout out to my friend Blaine Baker. We were singing on set. Okay, shut up, Abby. I can't back to the point.
No, I love it.
Assistant. Okay, so like, I mean, so now like that we're in post-production, we're almost wrapping up. Probably at the end of next week, we'll be done, I think.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we still have two more, like we're like episode 7 is this next week and we still have to deliver 9 and 10. Like we went on air earlier than we thought and we doubled up and stuff. So we're still like cranking them out. Anyways, so so once we're in pre and pro, a lot of it's like this kind of splits between work and then home. Mm-hmm. And brain and, mm-hmm. and like apartment and stuff like that. So what I mean, I asked this, but then like also it's like, you know, I don't ask them to iron. That's why I was like ironing and like I'm the worst ironer in the world. But I'm not gonna ask them to iron. Although like boy, I mean, could you imagine having somebody iron for you? That seems like so like bonkers. Anyways, Meeple, so wait, your person quit?
Yeah, but I would make them steam stuff for me.
See, but also you're a performer. That makes sense. Like that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's part of your job.
Just, it was like a lot of stress, and then I would be like, okay, you have to go downtown and buy this specific fabric for me, and I know where it is. And then I was like, if you ask me too many questions, it's over for you today. Like I just couldn't.
See, well, that's the difference.
That's hilarious.
Well, I've worked as an assistant many times, and I remember one time I was working in the office at the person's house, and I was doing like QuickBooks, like I was doing like accounting inputting.
Whoa.
Ooh, Abby, she perked up when I said QuickBooks. She's like, financial accounting.
No, I mean, I was just like, I was like, that's smart. I could never do that.
And so I was like doing that, and then she was also like, oh, can you do 3 loads of laundry while you're here?
Right.
Because the washer and dryer were in the basement, were right next door,
right.
And she was out and about for the day. Yeah. And I never thought that, like, that was a weird thing.
I don't think it is.
And I'm like, oh, I
don't think that's,
you know,
weird.
Yeah, I didn't think it was weird, but
it's,
I think,
not weird.
Some people go like, oh, I can only ask them to do like work related stuff, or
right.
I don't want to like let them in too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as you ask in like a respectful way and
for
the person's
sure.
being paid, it's like, all the tasks in the world are work.
I think that's for sure. I think that if Will, who's now a very dear friend of mine, actually, mm-hmm. like if he was hired as my assistant,
let's bring him on. No, I'm
yeah,
just kidding.
I mean, honestly, yeah. But if he was hired as my personal assistant, not with like he was hired by the show, right?
Uh-huh.
So that
yeah.
so like I mean, and also I could ask him if it's just like yeah, like you know, I think that that's my own thing, like
right.
But yeah, I don't think that's I totally get that, and I definitely like yeah I think it would be great to have that. Sorry. Ooh,
tell me if you think that this is too much.
When I was
a nanny, I was only paid like basic nanny wages to watch 2 children. But the mom would make me pick them up from school and drop them off at school in the morning, which means I would get to their house at 5:30 in the morning, drop them off at school, then go home, wait all day, and then get back to their house at 3:30. And then she would want me to do the dishes from the day before that I wasn't a part of. And do all their laundry.
And you were paid shitty?
I was paid like $15 an hour when most nannies in LA make like $25 to $30 an hour.
That is absolute bullshit.
Okay, see, I thought so too. So I just quit. And then everyone was like, well, that's normal nanny work. And I was like, I don't think it is.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. But like, I think there's like, if you're being paid less than the industry standard, and because honestly, if you're being paid like the industry standard, I imagine that's part of nannying. I don't know.
Right.
But like if you're being paid shitty,
I think I was just like a glorified babysitter. I was getting babysitter rates.
If you, after dropping them off, could go home with no kids and do some cleaning and get more hours and then go pick them up, it would have been like, nah, that's worth it because you can clean for a little bit and you're being paid for your whole day.
Yeah.
But the fact that you had to come back and then do dishes while the 2 kids are there.
Yeah.
It's a no for me,
ma'am.
It's a no for me.
Okay, I'm glad we're all in agreement.
Okay.
Let's take another quick break, and then we're going to get into our final seggy.
Is this too much, you guys? Is this going okay?
This is fantastic.
This is incredible.
Okay, well, let's be officially back.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We don't have any bad reviews.
When are we going to say hootie hoo? Are you going to say we're back and then
and
go,
we're
woo!
Back.
Hey, hey!
See, the reason we do that, you wouldn't know because you haven't seen Wicked, is that's the famous riff from the musical
from
Wicked.
Oh, no, and I'm messing it up.
No. You're doing the you Yeah.
Oh,
you're
I am. I copy that. Copy that.
No,
copyright that.
Yeah. Wait, that's Yahoo.
Oh, Yahoo. It is Yahoo.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
I have one more question before we get into our official like thing that we do at the end here, which is racy and fun.
Oh, God, racy and fun are not words that I ever use together. But continue.
Okay. which is there's a lot of both in season one, but then again in season two, there's a lot of conversation around therapy and specifically around journaling, around sort of writing your own life, taking notes, putting your inner thoughts down on paper. What is it about journaling that, well, first of all, is that just a device or are you personally in your real life a journaler?
It's a device. I never journal.
Really?
Never.
Amazing.
You make will do it for you.
I'm sorry, what?
Nothing. It was a bad joke.
What'd you say? What'd you say?
It's like you make will do it for you.
No, I it's really interesting because Busy Phillips has an amazing memoir that I'm reading. And she was talking, like, she was like, she went back to her journals. She's like, I'm going back to my journals to give you the exact thing. And I'm like, wow, that would have been an amazing way to like actually track stuff. And this is a really paranoid reason, but like I was afraid that people would find them and read them, and like my trust would be compromised with like, anyway, somebody would betray me and read my innermost thought, and I was like, I can't have that.
I have that so, exact same feeling.
Yeah, that is exactly why I don't. So it's definitely a device. And the thing about journals is that we want to talk about the history. Like it's like a device of being like Abby is her own historian. Right. And so like that was one way to show it. And since this came from a storytelling thing, Abby, you know, we didn't want Abby to be a performer. And so like, she's not telling stories. How are we going to show this? We're going to show that she's been writing. So I do write stories, but it's not like, they're not like,
the boxes of journals in the closet.
Yeah, I don't write my shit anywhere that people can find. Yeah, it's just I keep it up in my brain and it's addled. So fuck.
I was interested. And I always love in shows that feel so autobiographical when it's like, no, that's not about me.
Right.
It's like,
oh,
that's cool. It's like, you know, I mean, similarly like with the show like Insecure, where it's like Issa created it and her character's name is Issa. And then she's like, no, that's like some crazy story that a writer told and we just put it on the Issa character.
Right. Most of the stories are, well, actually, no, like first season special. Like I think it was very important because like, you know, the character's name is Abby McKinney. Was that a mistake? Probably. And I think just since I am, I mean, stupidly a very private person and I have the show now with a character named me about me, like, you know, this season was very like trying to be like, okay, like somebody like wrote in mozzarella sticks. And I was like, oh, I hate those. I'm like, keep them in. Right. Keep them in. We got to keep them separate. I hate them. Keep them in.
We should probably end the interview.
Oh, shit. I
hate mozzarella.
Yeah, oh, my God.
You know,
I thought you were like,
started drag, that's what I got paid in.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah.
I said, give me two orders of mozzarella sticks and endless drinks and I'll come to your show.
Yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
All right. All right, Meatball.
Now
Should
it's time
it?
For our next segment. It's called
Fuck Talk.
It's usually
Fuck Talk. I was like, fuck tag.
Like, yeah, fuck tag. I hate that game.
I'm in the Midwest, y'all. I can't play.
this is a segment where usually our guests tell a weird, funny, or uncomfortable dating or sex life story from their past. But Dipper has here Why don't you go ahead?
Well, I was just saying what I loved in season one, there's that great sex scene that's completely in the dark.
Right.
The fumbling and the lamp falling over and the ooh, and the getting the clothes off and this. And, you know, I'm just curious about like we're talking about how autobiographical is the show? Like, what is your relationship to sex and promiscuity and love and relationships? Are you a person who does hookups? Are you a person who only is sleeping with, you know, your partners? And if you have a crazy sex story, now is the time to sell it. Tell it.
Tell it. Oh, sell it.
Sell it, baby.
Trust me, nobody's buying. I'll tell you that much.
Are you sure? Now you're a big TV star.
Oh, yeah, nobody's that.
You're not getting any.
No. Oh, fuck. Come on. Look at this.
Well, she don't got the DMs. Ain't nobody can slide into the DMs.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Are you on Raya? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, is that the thing Ben Affleck was on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, also, it was, and he was gross on there, apparently.
Right? That's what I heard from a friend of mine who knew somebody. God. Like, yeah. Also, what's the deal with Jennifer Lopez, who's never been single in her life? I worry
what's
about
the
that.
Deal?
I worry about people that are never single.
I think
it makes me so uncomfortable.
It's just like, come on.
It's a good point, because you're looking at a person who is a fucking millionaire, global superstar.
Yeah.
Just she's got power, like, and like, so, and will always have some sort of a boyfriend. And you're like, whoa, like, do you,
like,
can you?
Yeah.
Can you just be
can
fortified
you just
in your singleness?
It makes me. I think she gives zero fucks what this trash bag thinks, but that it worries me.
Well,
and I also
we'll find
think
out
it's
after
like,
this airs.
Yeah.
Jennifer, our DMs are open, and we'll pass them on to Abby.
Also,
we'll send them to Will, and Will.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I love it so much. Okay, let's see. I define myself as a sex positive prude. I love that. Like, I think anything done with like transparency and honesty, like, fuck whoever you want. I'm thrilled. I just think like, yeah. So I think, but I'm a prudish person myself. I think there's it's just, I have a lot of shame about it. And I think I know where it comes from. I just think, and I have a lot of shame about my body. I'm not proud of it. I think I'm not proud. Like, I don't want to be a fat person who is ashamed of their body. Like, I'm ashamed of my shame. Like, that's where my shame lands. I'm not ashamed of my sexual identity, my gender identity, my mental illness. And like, I'm not ashamed of that shit. It's just who I am. The fatness, I carry so much shame about it. And so there's a lot of like, about my body and sex and stuff and feeling like it's whatever. And that people can't, like, will find me disgusting. And so we're ending on a really fun note. That's my own shit. But I just want to be honest about it.
I think I
love that.
I think all of us have felt that way probably before.
And I loved that. I mean, that there was a whole storyline like that, at least in season one with Chris, and like the whole idea of not being able to accept someone finding you attractive.
Right. And that was, and that whole thing, like, and I think, and just like, you know, I don't know. I'm 53. I don't know. It was just not how I grew up to feel confident or that I was worth it. I think, and that's by society, it's by everything. Right. Family, like, you know, my parents are, my mom's dead, but my, love her. I loved her and my dad's wonderful, but like, it's not like they loved having fat kids. Like, it wasn't something they were proud of. So I come by it very honestly. I think I refer to myself as dead inside for very many years. I think like I get like little, I think hooking up's kind of fun. It's you know, but like, oh yeah, I'm fucking a dead inside, like fucking old, I don't know. What's that called? Tumbleweed?
I'm a tumbleweed.
I'm just a fucking wispy fucking fat tumbleweed with a bad back, like dead inside. And I've been single for a long time, but I have to also say I'm thrilled. Like I am thrilled being single. Like and part of the reason that season two, like, this was never supposed to be a love story, right? Like, it was never a love story. It was set up that, like, you know, Chris was a device and it was based on a real ex-boyfriend of mine named Alex, who's lovely, and we're, you know, they actually just birthed their first child.
Amazing.
Oh,
with
wow.
their wife, and they're just a wonder. I went to their wedding. Like, I mean, we're just dear friends. Oh, this is a very important person in my life. So, but the show is never like, I talk about this so all the time. So, but anyways, I hate the fucking trope that people are only worthwhile if they're loved or fuckable or romantic love, or somebody is like in a romantic relationship with somebody and that gives them worth, especially women, especially fat women. Like, it drives me to the fucking brink. It like lowers people. Like, that's not what life is about to me. I love love. Like, people are like, I love weddings. I love when people are in love, when my friends are, I love it. It makes me happy. I'm not like fucking bitter about it. Right. I'm not bitter about other people's love. I am angry that like that society and a lot of folks think that you're only worthwhile if you are in a romantic, sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. It really drives me to the brink. And as I always say, add it to the fucking list. It's a huge list. So I don't know. And also like when we were going to do the sex scene, I was like, I mean, fuck. And then like Lily was like, it's going to be in the dark and I'll be very, you know. And so it was, and then she walked Theo and me through it before. And it was just very well, like choreographed and stuff. And it was just like, it was so panicky. It was a really stressful day, but like, yeah. Anyways, did that answer?
Well, I was going to tell a story about anal orgasms.
Oh, I love it. Tell me everything. I love it.
I was fucking this guy recently and he had multiple anal orgasms while I was fucking him and it made me feel like a fucking rock star.
That it would. That's amazing.
He was like, don't stop. And then his whole body was convulsing and I felt his asshole like
no
just,
way.
And I was like, oh my, like I didn't know about that.
That is, well,
like, I
didn't know about that either.
Meatball, and then he said that he was like, you know, it gets a little creamy back there when I do that. I was like, no, you have got like, to be kidding me.
Then see a doctor, because we've been over this. That's not possible. That means that there's something wrong with your insides.
I mean, I'm sorry. I want you to be happy, but there's something wrong with your insides.
Your insides are broken.
I want you to be healthy and happy, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. And holy shit, I've got to call people and tell them about this. But oh my God, see a doctor.
I thought you were about to say it after he finished. He turned and was like, by the way, love the pod.
Well, he does. He did reveal.
Not a listener.
I don't know that he listens to the pod, but he did reveal. He was like, something about, he was like, when is your next show? And I was like, oh, I thought
I gotta go
escape that for this moment. But anyhow, and then
awesome.
I fucked him a second time and it happened again. So I think he's prone to it, but I also think whatever the combination of our anatomies together is making for anal orgasming, which is a very cool development in anal sex.
Yes.
That rules.
Well, thank you for discovering that for all of us.
Well, yes. I guess, I mean, there are a lot of people who are very well versed in that experience, but for me, it was brand new.
I can't believe I get to be on here when you talk people. That's so cool.
What a gift.
I love it so much. No, for real. I love this shit. I love it. I'm very like pro sex work. I'm very pro like whatever people want. I'm very pro it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
We're very pro too.
Yeah.
We're very, very
Abby,
pro.
Abby, we want to thank you so much for being on the
thanks
podcast
for spending
today.
Your time with us.
This
we know you're very busy.
Yeah.
You're at work. You're at
you're
the
literally at
office.
Work right now. What are you talking about?
That's true. No, I wish
you're gonna be like, Will, get in here. We've got things to solve. That's my impression of you.
I love it. No, it was Deb. It was so fun seeing you again, and Meepo was so nice to meet
you. It was
you.
Nice to and meet you too.
Amazing, and please let me know when you're performing next in Chicago. It'd be really fun to hang out. And
yes,
if that's too much, I understand. I don't want to be a creep, but I
no, come sit backstage with me. It'll be fun.
What?
We can have
it's
all...
always the best.
Oh yeah, I don't make my friends sit out in the audience. They sit backstage.
No, sit backstage. What? Hang out. The dressing room.
And get in the dressing room. Meet the dolls. And see have the show. As many vodka lemons as you want.
Oh my God, lives are changing. Meeting mine. This is bonkers. I'm so excited.
All right. Well, you know, there's nowhere to follow you on social media. So everyone make sure you're watching season two of Work in Progress on Showtime. And Meatball, hit us with the outro.
Thank you so much for listening to Sloppy Seconds. You can follow us on Instagram at Sloppy Pod. You can send us an email to sloppysecondspod@gmail.com or call in with your own fuck talk story to 213-536-9180. You can follow us on Instagram at Big Dipper Jelly or Spicy It's Meatball or Fat Drag Meatball on Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode, which come out every Tuesday and Friday. Goodbye.
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 Doodle doot doot forever dog. To listen to Sloppy Seconds ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus.
Sloppy Seconds is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, a.k.a. Mom.
Hosted by Big Dipper and Meatball. Music, editing, and sound design by William Pitt.
Executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Joe Cilio, Brett Boehm, and Alex Ramsey.
Our artwork was drawn by Christian Cimarroni.
And our theme song was written by Mike Malarkey.